Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snack Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Jordan is on best.
Welcome to another edition of the Indie Cornrows Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Schindler. As always, before we get started, if you've not already, please be sure to rate and review us over on Apple Podcasts. That really helps us out. Just about 50 reviews. I'm just going to get right into it. Tom, first of all, how are you doing? We're talking after Game 7. Pacers are now 5-2. Feels like they should not be 5-2. But first of all, how are you doing? What's an immediate takeaway from the game?
Hey, it's JWB, just win, baby. That's all that matters at the end of the NBA. So I don't know how they did it. I still don't know how they did it. I saw it, but they did it. Got it done. Made big plays, played all 48, and then took the extra time in OT to close them out. And, man, that turned out to be a fun finish after it was just kind of a frustrating game to watch.
Yes. Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I want to start off with the positives before we talk about some of the things that definitely could have been better. Number one, I thought Miles was just incredible today. Obviously, I mean, the fouls ends up fouling out of the game, but the Pacers don't even make it to overtime without his defensive plays over the last 4 minutes. I thought he was fantastic. Offensively, too, really good. He had that follow and transition again. He keeps finding openings that just lead to easy baskets. He just spaces the court so much better, not just to the arc. I tweeted this out, you know, just the way that he's spacing inside the paint is fantastic compared to years prior. So many times it felt like he was just like a clunky part of the offense, never quite in the right spot, always like overthinking where he had to be, it seemed like. But now he's processing everything up to speed with everyone else, and he's getting to the right spots. And he was really integral down the stretch. Obviously, he hits the game tying three, which if he gets the ball in that scenario last year, I feel like he probably checks out of it. Would you agree? He either checks out of it or he hesitates for a second, and then probably I don't want to say that he misses it, but I mean, this is a different Miles on offense, and we've talked about it the last couple gamers. But he's just completely different on the offensive end. I think it's the easiest way to put it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely, you know, been willing to take some big shots in the past. But I would say overall, like you were saying, he just seems like he has more purpose out there on offense as far as, like, you know, knowing exactly what is expected or what he is free to do or – you know, he's looking to make plays more than, you know, maybe looking to fit in with guys who plays are being run for. And I think maybe that's a big thing with Bjorkgren is that, yeah, you're the fourth and fifth option on the floor, but you can score if you are in these positions, and make moves and cut when there's an opening and he seems to be really hunting out those situations when he's going. But, yeah, he was huge late in that game. And, you know, after, you know, honestly, it wasn't a great full game for him.
Oh, yeah, definitely not.
But the early foul.
Yeah, the fourth quarter in OT.
He was loose with the ball. And it was, but, I mean, again, this is the growth in him is that, you know, you go to the bench with, what, 7.0 rebounds and,
yep,
and 3 fouls. And, you know, there were a lot of nights in the past where he would not have recovered and had such a big impact late in the game. And he just got in there, stuck with it. And, you know, he was fresh because he had so much time on the bench. And,
yeah.
And, but yeah, he makes that little pass pump fake on the tying shot and lets it go. Oh, that was sweet. That was,
it was beautiful. So quick. I saw, yeah. I mean, I tweeted this out too. Before Vic stole the inbounds pass, I was about ready to turn off my TV and come set up so we could record. And then Vic steals the inbound pass. I'm like, okay, well, something has to happen still. And then he gets it out to Miles, and Miles scores. And I'm like, oh my God. Oh my God. So then, yeah, yeah. It was complete change up.
And the thing about, right, you know, about a minute before that, you know, I think it was Malcolm and Justin Holiday had really good looks where it looked like, oh, they could have cut the three, maybe could have tied it. And then it just seemed like that was the opportunity lost and it was over. And then, boom, last 20 seconds, Vic makes it happen. So, oh, that was fantastic.
Yes, exactly. Okay, one of the first things we got to talk about too, you know me, Tom, I'm one of the last people to complain about officiating, especially when it comes to the Pacers in general. The officiating for both sides tonight, I thought was horrendous. It felt like, you know, in the Celtics game, I mean, I thought they would have let Tristan Thompson and Domas just start swinging at each other before calling fouls. And tonight it was like, if you breathed on somebody, it was a foul. Which was, I don't know. It was, I think part of it was like punctuated by it just being overall a sloppy game for both teams. I mean, letting up a ton of second chance points for the Pacers.
Yeah.
A lot of turnovers for the Pels. I mean, the turnover battle ended up being pretty similar, but I mean, mostly just because the Pacers squandered like everything in the fourth quarter. I think they ended up with like 7 or 8 turnovers just in the fourth quarter alone. So both teams were just had small minor mistakes that kept adding up and were making it overall not an aesthetically pleasing game. But the reffing on top of that just made it. It was I normally am not somebody who screams at the TV, but I was getting, you know, I was definitely getting pissed tonight. Even for foul calls on the Pelicans, I was like, what are we doing here? You know, how is that a foul? Like, it just didn't feel like it was being called similarly at all. Like the lane violations, like when is the last time that you have ever seen a lane violation called that was not like a blatantly obvious one where somebody's like somebody, you know, checks their free throw and a guy's like halfway in the lane. So I don't know. It was a quirky game.
Yeah. I mean, the Pacers had about 26 fouls and that was led to obviously a lot of free throws. I mean, it was kind of interesting that obviously it was an even game going to OT. But the Pelicans had a 10-point advantage at the free throw line, and the Pacers had a 10-point advantage at the 3-point line. So that kind of evened out. But it just is still, and I know Sabonis brings the physicality to the game, but I mean, hell, so does Adams. And it just seems like, you know, there were points there where Sabonis seemed to be complaining about Adams, you know, grabbing him and throwing him, and then they're calling it on Sabonis. And it really kind of took him out of his normal game for sure. And it was just like you said, you know, I said, I think a tweet after the game, it was, you know, the Pacers had to get in the muck and just grind it out. And that, in large part, is because the refs, the way they had the game flowing with the whistles blowing so much. And it's not, like you said, not an aesthetically pleasing style of play to watch. But again, it makes these types of wins even more sweet when it doesn't go to plan, but you find a way anyways, especially on the road.
Yeah. No, I would totally agree with that. Before we get to the next point, I want to take a quick break, and then I will go in on what I have to talk about. So we'll be right back.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
Welcome back, Pacers fans. All right, so I promise this is going to be a short rant. It's probably going to be a long rant, but I'll try and keep it short. Malcolm Brogdon, even without overtime, played 40 minutes today. Domas, if he had not fouled out, was also on track to play 40 minutes. Victor ends up playing 36 minutes in overtime. This is a trend that is carrying over, at least, you know, over the last four or five games. And it's starting to, I don't want to say bother me, but it's something that's concerning to me, certainly. You know, we're in game seven of a 72 game season, coming off of an unprecedented, you know, last year and a half. And there's already injuries on the team with TJ out. Malcolm is an injury susceptible player. Domas is coming off of an injury that could easily be re-aggravated. Victor is, I mean, we know his injury history. Tom, I want to ask you, before I talk even more about it, I want to ask where you're at on it, because I think as much as it's nice that the Pacers won game seven against the Pels, I do have a lot of concerns about playing some of these guys the way they are. And just minute distribution overall has been kind of vexing to me so far throughout the season.
Yeah, it definitely is one of the surprises for me, especially, you know, from what we heard from Bjorkman when he was hired and you know, how they were talking about, you know, using the regular season to get into the playoffs, but preparing to be at your best in the playoffs. And maybe this is part of the plan where you're going heavy with your main guys early on as you're learning what to do and getting as many, you know, as many reps and as many situations as you can as you're figuring out what Bjorkman wants done. And also hopefully stacking some wins now. I mean, I don't think that could have been a part of the plan, because I don't know that you can rely on a new system, guys learning a new system and also putting wins up. But I'm just playing devil's advocate here. But, yeah, you know, you're building this up. And then I keep saying this, though, when you bring it up, at some point it's going to give. I mean, you can't keep this pace up, you know. So, and even tonight, I kept waiting for Jakar to come in and play some, you know, a heavier little, at least 5 to 10 minutes in the second half with Sabonis. Not only was he, you know, dealing with some foul issues, but again, his minutes, like you said, were huge. Now, that group was running well. And, you know, that's one thing Brooklyn does seem to do, is when a group, whether it's bench guys or not, are going, he keeps them in there. You know, while they're going, but it, you know, at the end, not having Jakar, even like at the start of the fourth quarter, which was when they made a nice little run, but I felt like that would have been the time to get Sabonis a little blow there, and you know, he had held up pretty well in there, I felt, and really was kind of helped keep them from getting buried in that first half. When, you know, Williamson and Adams are so big.
Yeah.
And then you have Ingram's length that, you know, the Pacers had to have some more size going there. And Jakar did fine, brought a little spark. But yeah, I know Brogdon is in supposedly the best shape of his life and he's ready to go, but it's like at some point you can't keep his pace up. It's incredible. And even, you know, I mean, he had that 8.5-man rotation basically today because Jakar played in the first half. But, so, I feel your pain. I mean, I'm not, you know, things are going well, and I do see the benefit of these guys playing a lot together right now in the system. But again, like I say, at some point, you know, and maybe it's coming this, you know, they have a, that schedule really ramps up when they hit the road next week.
Yeah, exactly.
They got two more this week. But again, I think I said that last week. So I know it can't keep up this pace though for the whole season, that's for sure.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I just think, to me, and it's not me trying to hammer on it. It's just considering that the front office and Nate himself talked about wanting to play a deep rotation, give new looks, and not to say that they haven't given new looks, they have. But when you talk about, you hype up, you know, doing things differently than you did last year, I mean, you could argue that it's an even more intense version of the minutes distribution from last year. I know that's different. It's a reductive way to talk about it for sure. But like, I mean, there's a case. And I think that's why it's slightly bothersome to me. I mean, we came in with, you know, this is what's been talked about is not what's going on per se. I mean, obviously a lot of stuff that's happening on court is the stuff that's been talked about, but getting some of the guys' looks just hasn't been a thing. You know, and I think, I don't know. It's just an interesting line for me because you look at it, it's like, yes, all right, you're 5-2 now. You beat the Pels. That's awesome. You lost to the Knicks, whatever. I think the way I look at it is when you come out to start the season, I know it's a new coach and a new system, but isn't this the time when you want to be running 11, 12 guys and seeing what you have or just trying new things? Like, you don't want to air everybody out and get them, you know, completely run down at the beginning of the year. Not to say that's what's going to happen, but it doesn't even matter what kind of shape Malcolm's in or what anybody's in. Like, it's just not a sustainable method of play right now. And of course, you know, I'm talking strictly off the 7 games that we've seen. But just based on this being like a trajectory, and I'm sure things will change, but at the same time, I don't know. I'm very reticent to say that obviously you can't be displeased with starting 5-2. But at the same time, I just think that there are enough red flags and it's like, it's a little bit concerning. Because like a guy like Keelan, Keelan, even though he wasn't great in the minutes he got against the Knicks, he played 4.5 minutes. I don't really think that there was anything to say, oh, well, he shouldn't play. I mean, you look at Malcolm and Domas both. I mean, they played that massive stretch in the third quarter, headed into the fourth. And, I mean, Malcolm's like hardly even closing out on guys. There was the Lonzo Ball had a wide open three because Malcolm came back in transition. He'd been out there for like 8 minutes straight already. So he just doesn't make his routine closeout. And that's an easy basket for Lonzo. Like little things like that. Like it gets to a point where there's not really a benefit to having them out there that long. It starts to become a negative because of how much you're having to run stuff through them. So I don't know. I think there just needs to be more of a balance. And I'm hopeful that we'll see that soon. Ed could have been out there getting minutes. And again, it's not like they have to play 20 or 25, like just try 8 to 10 minutes and see what happens. If anything, it's energy. Like I wouldn't say that Jakar had like an amazing game, but he was impactful. I mean, he had like his own little mini scoring run that helped get the Pacers going and he was able to give fouls on Zion. I thought that was huge. Like it's not anything instrumental, but he got to the line. He was out there playing defense. He was a factor on the glass. I don't know. I just think that kind of contribution is something that you could hopefully get out of more guys from the bench or at least try to. And we just didn't see that and haven't.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't mind a 9-man rotation. Actually, in most cases, I kind of prefer that. But with worn out now, it seems like, and I think they definitely would, you know, were settling in on that 9-man rotation with worn out, which would then, you know, you would think depending upon matchups like today, I mean, it was, I think even if Warren was there, you know, Jakar was a guy that you were going to turn to, if the Pelicans, you know, when the Pelicans were having their way there with the big guys in there, because he's pretty much the only other option to get in there. But they had to do something, and you know, worked to stem the tide. But yeah, like I just said earlier, it's just not sustainable playing that many minutes, going the full way. So we'll see if it you know, changes a little bit. You know, we got kind of a hint, but you know, Keelan's going to be a guy that's going to be in, probably he's going to be either Keelan or Jakar now, looking at, you know, who that matchup might be. He's going to be filling some of those gap minutes with Warren out. But yeah, those with Malcolm, you would think even 5 minutes of Ed Sumner at some point would, you know, be able to give him a little more breathing room. Because, I mean, he's you're right. I mean, his injury history is scary to think about him. If he is out there tired and not playing, you know, I'm not saying not playing hard, but not, you know, when you're worn out after that much time and you don't get the breaks to catch your breath, you know, that's when an injury can happen. But fortunately, he caught his breath for the game winner tonight, though.
Yes, I would totally agree. That was definitely a nice part. I think, too, in a more positive direction, I mean, Justin Holiday played a really good game just all around. Actually had the second best plus minus on the team other than Doug McDermott, who Doug had his own run. Like, he was a huge part of that run. When he missed that shot, yeah, though, at the end of the game in OT, I thought the game was over, frankly. Or not OT, when I mean in the fourth quarter, when he missed that shot in the fourth quarter, yeah. I thought that was when I was ready, yeah, to turn the TV off. I was like, oh, wow, if Doug's going to miss that, all right, let's turn the TV off and get ready to go. But he was really good. His driving has been great. I thought he was good defensively as well. I mean, not defensively, gosh. On the glass, I meant to say. He only finished with 3 rebounds, mm-hmm, but that offensive rebound he got was huge. I don't know. I've been really impressed with Doug this year. I think he's been really solid. Aaron Holiday, though, I think, where are you at with Aaron and how he's been so far? Because I think part of it, he's just being used in a role that is, I mean, it's the role that he was playing to an extent last year, but he's really not getting the opportunity to do anything with the ball in his hands. Very few opportunities to run pick and roll or drive to the rim. Just a lot of him kind of spotting up in the corner, and his shot, unfortunately, hasn't been falling, but I wonder a little bit if
this problem, I think, is that shot's just, I mean, it's just not there.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's gotta be his game right now. And so again, like you say, maybe he'd be better coming off the bench where he can be running more stuff and not be in that third off guard.
Yeah. I kind of wonder if they elevate Justin or Doug into the starting lineup, because it just seems sensible. But it would also be difficult too, because of especially with how much TJ has been playing lately. It's hard to bring both of them off the bench at the same time, just size wise, especially against the Pels. Like, this was a tough matchup for Aaron, because I mean, the smallest guy on the court for the Pels the entire game is, JJ Redick, I guess, or Eric Bledsoe height wise, but Eric Bledsoe is like as strong as Aaron is. Eric Bledsoe is like the strongest guard in the league. So, it's a tough matchup, but regardless,
that Pels team's a beast of a matchup. They're good. They're just young at certain spots, but my God, I mean, there were times that where I was like, Ingram looked like Durant out there pulling up in the mid range. There's nothing you could do. It's too long. And, they have some pieces.
Yeah, no, they're really fun. And actually, a funny thing, over at Premium Hoops, the site I edit at, one of my friends wrote about Zion Williamson's defense and put it out. And the craziest part, I mean, the Pels defense has been really good this year. But as we saw tonight, I mean, Zion Williamson is not a good defender currently. Mm-hmm. As much as he's an impactful offensive player, his defense is pretty horrid. And the Pels, when he's on court, they have like the fourth best defense in the league. When he's off court, they have an 86 defensive rating, which would be like the greatest defense of all time. So that's just like to illustrate how good of a defensive unit they are. But I think the last thing I kind of want to hit on, though, the rebounding is just, man, out rebounded 67 to 47 tonight, which is obviously terrible. There's really no way around that. What do you think is happening with the rebounding? Because I, you know, I want to go back and watch a lot of the rebounds and maybe write about it. But right now, it's just been, it's been awful and totally, I mean, killer.
Just forget defensive rebounds by the opponent. It's the offensive rebound that is,
yes, exactly,
crazy. Because I mean, it's just, you know, they got New Orleans going big time in the first half, and you know, Sabonis is in their bay, I know. Adams and Williamson, though, were just shoving those guys around. And I mean, Turner's just never been a great rebounder going and getting the ball, you know, and he can get knocked off balance, which does allow him to go and jump and get the ball. And that just continually shows up. When another team has, you know, size inside, you know, like a Cleveland. And it is just a killer. And now, you know, they're even smaller without Warren in there. So that's just always going to be an area where they're going to have to battle. I mean, it's incredible how – I mean, if I were a team like that, I would definitely hit the offensive glass. A lot of teams have – really make it a priority to hit the offensive glass, but I have a feeling they're going to be attacking it against the Pacers until they start figuring out a way to get guys in there and clear those, you know, clear what is, should be a defensive stop.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough too, because I mean, part of the thing with Miles too, I mean, he's not a good rebounder. That's totally fair to say, but also, I mean, it's tough because it's felt like every single one of his blocks tonight resulted in a putback almost, because it wasn't corralled. And that's not on Miles. I mean, he makes a great defensive play, but it's just, that's the state of the rebounding right now. So hopefully that
he altered a lot of shots today.
Yes.
Too.
Oh my God. Yes. He was so good.
Yeah.
No, it's hard to really find too much fault with the second half. Thank you for Miles. But yeah, regardless, that's something that I hope gets improved over time. But it's not, just given the fact that that's been a problem for a couple of years now, not sure that we are going to see that improve. But it sounds nice in principle.
No.
Well, Tom, do you have anything you want to close out on before we get out of here?
No, I mean, honestly, I was getting in one of those negative modes with the Pacers when they – can go on a streak in the wrong way, and the fact they pulled this out was huge, because you got the teams coming in with Houston and Phoenix coming to the field house this week, and those games are always a crapshoot because you can catch them on the wrong night and just get blitzed and run out of the gym. Hopefully that won't happen, but that threat is always there when you're playing those types of teams. So now they got that, you know, 5-2 record is a heck of a lot than 4-3. And yes, like I said at the beginning, JWB, doesn't matter how you do it, just win, baby.
Yeah, no, I agree. At the end of the day, win's a win. I got it. Yep. It's my job to bring the youthful pessimism, right? It's the opposite of the saying, but I'll bring it anyways. Well, Tom,
always striving for greatness.
Yes, exactly. Or not even that. I just I want to see the potential play out and. I don't know. I just have questions. I have a lot of questions. I think that's why I got into writing and talking about stuff. So we'll see what happens. Tom, this was fun. To everyone listening, thank you for listening. Go Pacers. We have a lot of great content coming up this week. As Tom mentioned, Houston coming up in 2 days, or I guess one day if you're listening to this tomorrow. Phoenix on Friday? Saturday. Phoenix on Saturday. And then Sac is on Monday, I think.
And then, they're off on the road. Yep.
So it's going to be we got a lot coming up. So thank you for listening. Enjoy the rest of your week or rest of your time until you listen to this pod again later on in the week. Just have a good rest of your day.